Welcome to Bespoke Investment Group's Bespoke Cast. I'm George Perks, macro strategist for Bespoke Investment Group. Bespoke Cast features conversations with markets professionals and economists whose views we find interesting or insightful into the world of finance and economics. If you like what you hear today, you can learn more about our firm by visiting our website, bespokepremium.com. Bespoke offers financial market research and insight to investors of all types, ranging from individuals to large institutions. You can follow us on Twitter at @BespokeInvest. If you enjoy BespokeCast, we would also appreciate you reviewing the podcast in the iTunes Store or on your favorite podcast platform. Reviews help us gain visibility and also help us improve the podcast in future episodes. Welcome to a special edition of BespokeCast. My friend Guillermo Roditi, who's a former guest from one of our longer conversations, has some really interesting data and analysis to share with a very topical subject, the U.S. government shutdown, and we wanted to try out a different format with you guys for this episode. So this will be a pretty quick conversation. We're going to try and keep it under 15 minutes and talk really hard and fast about what's happening and the fiscal effects of the government shutdown. So Guillermo, welcome back to BespokeCast.
Thank you, George. Thanks for having me again.
So what do you have for us? What is going on with the government shutdown? What's happening to the economy because of it?
Well, I think the initial thing we want to talk about is that what we are seeing as the fiscal multiplier of this shutdown is much larger than any other fiscal multiplier effects we've seen as a result of, stalled debt ceiling negotiations or, the 17 days that we spent in that shutdown in 2013.
Okay, so a fiscal multiplier for folks that don't live and breathe macroeconomics, what is a fiscal multiplier?
A fiscal multiplier refers to the total aggregate amount of gross economic activity that is generated by a dollar of marginal government expenditures. So if you can increase GDP by $2 by increasing fiscal expenditures by $1, that would be a multiplier of 2.
Okay. So do you have an estimate for what the multiplier is looking like this time around versus, for instance, in 2013 when the government was shut down for 17 days?
Yes. Let me preface this by saying that these numbers are going to sound a little bit ridiculous. The sheer magnitude of them is a little bit bewildering. I've checked them once, twice, thrice. The reason they're very big is because the knock-on effects of this shutdown are extending very widely into a lot of areas of the economy where we haven't seen these kind of repercussions take place during prior shutdown. So right now, when we're looking at daily deposits to the Treasury Department, those are, when any money gets withheld out of your paycheck, that's where that money goes. They post it daily. And, after analyzing this particular series for a few years, I've developed a pretty good both feel for it and been able to recognize the daily and weekly and monthly patterns where the deposits come in, which allows us to get a real-time estimate of how any period is comparing to the period of a year ago.
What you're doing is you're saying how much tax withholding from labor is flowing in, and I can use that to get an estimate of aggregate economic activity for the entire country in close to real time.
I wouldn't say aggregate economic activity, but I could say aggregate, wage and salary dispersals,
which is presumably pretty correlated to consumption, which is what, 70% of GDP. So, you're getting a pretty holistic estimate in not real time, but much higher frequency than, for instance, GDP, which is very lagged and so on and so forth.
Well, right now we don't have to worry about that because there's no GDP being put out because
exactly.
Commerce is shut down. Anyway, so right now we're looking at a shortfall as of today of $16.2 billion in deposits for withheld income and employment taxes. At the peak of the disparity, we're looking at $26 billion. These numbers are really big. To give you kind of an idea of what this means, $16.2 billion shortfall in deposits would translate to about $60 billion in wages that were not disbursed. You know, if you kind of weigh that for the length of this shutdown, on an annualized equivalent basis, that would be about $545 billion that we're, you know, missing out of the economy. Those are big numbers. I mean, I don't have to tell you that.
Yeah, nominal GDP is mid 17 trillion or 18 trillion, call it roughly. So, you know, you're talking about what, coming up on 5%, around 5% of GDP on a nominal basis?
I'm thinking more about it as a percent of labor income. And right now, on an annualized basis, that would represent 6.1% of labor income.
Which is huge. I mean, labor income doesn't just drop like that. So if those numbers are correct and are actually borne out in what households actually receive in compensation and what actually hits bank accounts, then that's a big problem.
Exactly. This is really affecting things to in a magnitude that I've never seen before. And I've been doing this stuff for, you know, 11 years now.
To try and just poke some holes in what may be causing this, and I'm sure you'll shoot these down one after the other, but my first instinct is to say, well, you know, of course your aggregate withholding is dramatically lower because 800,000 furloughed workers aren't getting any kind of paycheck and therefore no withholding from them at all. So are you backing out basically those direct impacts that we already know about and can look at through the furlough numbers?
Let's talk about furloughs for a second, right? So we have two direct effects from the government shutdown. We have government employees who are not getting paid. Either they're, you know, deemed essential and they're working without pay, or they're furloughed and, you know, receiving no pay as a result. Secondly, you have contractors to the federal government, which are actually a larger pool of labor than the furloughed workers. Estimates on the low end of both workforces combined range from 1.8 to 2.1 million in affected workers. Using statistics from the Office of the Personnel Management, which is also furloughed, their April 2018 report for quarter four 2017, which is the common characteristics of the government, that's basically your handbook of everybody that works for their government, what they do, how much they get paid, what the distribution of those incomes looks like, and weighted by different pay grades and according to the number of people in each position and each pay grade, I'm coming up with an estimate of a median government wage of $81,000 annually. You know, if you use that and you kind of calculate what you would expect the effective income bracket, income tax to be, and what the effective withholding rate to be, you get about 29% for an effective withholding rate. So for 1.8 million workers, using that median wage, we would be expecting about a $16 billion shortfall in salaries and wages, which would translate to a $4.6 billion shortfall in tax receipts. And for 2.1 million, we'd be looking at 18.7 billion and 5.4 billion, respectively. So as you can see, we're
just real quick, just so we have a handle on those numbers again, just plainly stated, based on the calculations you did, the withholding number that you would expect to come from government workers is how much?
Anywhere in between 4.6 and 5.4 billion.
And the actual calculated missing withholding that you're measuring is?
As of January 23, which is the latest number, we have $16.2 billion. And let me just tell you that this is actually like a very rosy scenario, because we're not going to get the data about how much didn't come in for the federal pay period of, you know, that is tomorrow, January 25th, we're not going to get that until Tuesday. So this is all, except for one federal pay period, this is all essentially, you know, private sector data.
Okay. So I think to boil it down then, roughly one quarter, let's call it just to keep things simple, roughly one quarter of the shortfall that you're measuring in the payroll tax withholding gap that represents a slowing of economic activity. Roughly one quarter of that is direct effects on from government workers and contractors not getting paid because of the shutdown. Is that fair to say?
That is the upper end of what it could be. The actual numbers should be a lot lower, just because, you know, when I'm giving you that $16 billion number, I'm calculating, you know, for 34 days, whereas we only have data for one federal pay period.
Okay. So back of the envelope then to that 6.1% income number that you cited earlier. So the payroll numbers suggest that roughly a 6.1% hit to aggregate wage income is taking place at on an annualized basis. Roughly 1 to 1.5% of that, call it, is the direct effects. And the rest of it, so 4.5%, give or take, of the income hit is other stuff. Is that a fair way to sort of sum that up?
I would say, yes, I would say that. I would say that, you know, I'm projecting that if this shutdown lasts, you know, more than 4 or 5 more days, we are going to be looking at a multiplier of 4, which, if you're a person that is versed with this literature, is, you know, that magnitude is just not something that you ever see. You know, most of the times we're talking about, you know, multipliers pretty close to unity.
Right, i.e. a dollar of spending is not going to generate that much further knock-on effects. Instead, you know, we're seeing the complete opposite of that. Guillermo, why is that multiplier so high?
The short answer is that normally when you have an interruption into the economy, whether it be government related or natural disaster related, there is, you know, or even just, you know, when a city shuts down because of a snowstorm, you know, businesses have leeway to absorb some of this volatility. You know, if you know you're going to have 2 slow days, you don't shut down your store. You just, you know, maybe operate at a lower staffing or operate at full staffing and just, you know, eat the cost. But once you're, you know, projecting these kinds of time periods, you know, the private sector has to adjust. And, you know, sometimes you have to reduce staffing or reduce hours. And then the other one is, you know, certain agencies need to be open for businesses to be able to conduct business. We're talking about, for example, you know, breweries. You know, if you can't get those beer labels approved, you know, you can't run bottling lines, you can't run canning lines. That means, you know, essentially anybody who is going to be running or canning any beverage, you know, that contained alcohol, that was either a new product or a seasonal product, you know, those people are out of work until that happens.
Is there a reason that we haven't seen an uptick in unemployment claims then? I mean, the most recent data, and those are lagged a week, so you might not expect them to be feeding through directly right away. But certainly, I mean, the most recent unemployment print initial jobless claims print that we received today was less than 200,000 for the whole economy, which is extraordinarily low relative to the labor force. So why haven't other indicators picked up what your data is showing?
If you're predicting the shutdown to be transitory, and at this point, I think everybody realizes that it has to be transitory, that the alternative is for, you know, the wheels to come off the economy, and that doesn't seem reasonable. You know, you maintain your staffing, but maybe you cut the hours. You have people, you're not really like firing these people or laying them off. You know, you're just saying, hey, you know, we just don't have any work this week. And, you know, another interesting example here is the Small Business Administration, the SBA. So right now, at this point, we are probably missing about $1 billion worth in SBA loan dispersals. And that's, you know, small businesses borrowing money to buy, you know, capital goods. And so you get this knock-on effect where it's not only that businesses are not buying these goods, but, you know, their suppliers who might depend on that activity, you know, have their customers at a standstill. The people who would have transported and installed those goods, you know, don't have that work right now. Then you get things like outside government offices, for example. You know, if you own a coffee shop and you're running a coffee shop outside a government office, you know, you're not selling any coffee. You're gonna have to shut down for, you know, for the duration of the week, you know, basically until the government reopens. And there's a lot of expenses that go along with being employed. We're talking about, you know, commutes, you know, things as simple as people's meals, office supplies that are expended day to day. And, you know, one of the things that I don't think people are talking enough about is the non-personnel expenditures that we are foregoing during this shutdown. Anybody that's employed for the government is not flying right now, you know? And so, if you don't have, you know, people, you know, government people traveling, that's, you know, airfare that's lost, that is hotel, that is like taxis, that is their per diem. And so I think, you know, when people talk about 800,000 workers, what you're missing there is that it's not only their wages, but it's all the money that they spend while they're working.
Just to finish up, could I ask you for three quick predictions? First prediction is what you think this data is telling you about the employment situation report that's due in about a week. Second, what you think this data is telling you about what Q1 GDP would be versus what it would be without the government shutdown. And third, whether the economic impacts you're seeing through your analysis are high enough to cause a recession.
Okay, we'll start with the employment situation report. The employment situation sample period was at the beginning of January before, you know, before when everybody still thought that it was going to resolved, you know, be resolved in a few days. I think that we shouldn't necessarily expect a big surprise in the employment situation report. And I think that one of the things that's important to note here is that the way that relationships between businesses act as shock absorbers for this, you know, fiscal impact, as we progress in terms of time, we are less able to absorb those shocks in the private sector. And so the pass-through increases as a function of time. So I think because the sample period was at the beginning of the month, we don't really have much to worry about there. If it were to continue for another 2 weeks, obviously the results would be, you know, much more pronounced in that survey. The second was, what was your second question again?
What's your estimate for the GDP impact? So, you know, if GDP was going to be 2.5%, all, if everything was normal, what are we looking at now, hypothetically?
Again, the effect to GDP is going to increase as a function of time. I think that, you know, for if it, this had lasted, you know, about 2 weeks, I would say that it's a rounding error and you can forget about it. I think that now we're looking about at maybe a 25 basis point impact to GDP. I think that as it goes on, we might be looking at as much as, you know, a 0.3 percentage to GDP for every 2 week period.
Those are big numbers. Those are all annualized rate, not quarter over quarter, of course.
Yes.
Okay. And the last question is, do you think this is severe enough as we currently stand? I mean, we don't know when this thing's going to end. Congress is actually appears to be negotiating a little bit. But, you know, assuming this doesn't extend too much longer, is the damage severe enough right now to cause a recession? And how much longer would it have to last before a recession becomes a real risk as a direct result of the policy?
At this current time, I don't think this is a recessionary risk. This is obviously a risk to growth. And it has, you know, marked economic impacts. But at this point, I really think that the human cost is really the worst part about this, because it's hitting people who don't have a lot of room. You know, we're withholding income and resources from people who really need it. But as this continues, yes, absolutely, it could become a recessionary risk. For example, if this were to be resolved on Monday, we would probably get some kind of resolution from legislators. We would probably back pay everybody who has been working without pay, probably have some sort of compensation for furloughed workers. Activity that did not take place during this period, some of it would be lost and some of it would, just be pent up, and we would kind of have like a flurry of economic activity, and we would, reduce a lot of the effects that we've seen so far. If this goes on for another 2 or 3 weeks, there's going to be a lot more losses that cannot be made up. But I don't think we have to worry about this causing a recession unless we get to like March or something. Because once you get to March, you're talking about, things like SNAP benefits not being funded, WIC benefits not being funded. You're talking about housing and urban development, kind of being in a crisis. We already have, problems with them not being able to sign certain contracts and, maybe losing access to certain properties.
We are at the limit of our time here. Guillermo, this is fantastic. Really fun, quick conversation to have. Thanks so much for coming on BespokeCast, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us this week on the BespokeCast. Once again, I'm Bespoke Investment Group's macro strategist, George Perks. If you enjoy BespokeCast, please consider reviewing the podcast in the iTunes Store or on your favorite podcast platform. Reviews help us gain visibility and also help us improve the podcast in future episodes. If you'd like to learn more about our firm, please visit bespokepremium.com and follow us on Twitter at @BespokeInvest. Our research includes reports, analysis, commentary, and data sets sent out daily. Special thanks to the Free Music Archive for the music featured in this episode. The track is called Marathon Man by Jason Shaw and is made available under the Creative Commons license. Please visit freemusicarchive.org for more information. Copyright 2017, Bespoke Investment Group, LLC. The information herein was obtained from sources Bespoke Investment Group, LLC believes to be reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy. Neither the information nor any opinions expressed constitute a solicitation of the purchase or sale of any securities or related instruments. Bespoke Investment Group, LLC is not responsible for any losses incurred from any use of this information.